House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. I'm Eimear Considine and I am joined, as always, by Ian Madigan, Ireland and Ulster out half. Ian, this is episode 8 of our season so far this year. We've had 12 episodes in total, including our bonus episode. We've had some amazing guests on the show, the likes of Nigel Owens, Hugo Monier, Brian O'Driscoll, Sean Cronin, Senan Aupu, Shane Williams, Mike Brown, CJ Stander. You had Jordy Murphy on last week with Freddie Burns, and last week we had Dan Leo on as well, the former Samoan international. What a guy he was. Some lineup of names there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been really enjoyable. I think probably the biggest telling of that is how quickly it's gone by. Like, literally, they've flown by, which is always a good sign that you're enjoying the process of it. So thanks to all the listeners who've been listening in and for all the kind words and support that we've got. And we hope that you enjoy the show and we'll continue to enjoy it going forward.
Absolutely. And if you did happen to miss any of those amazing guests, it's worth checking it out on the House of Rugby podcast. You know, it's up on YouTube and on the podcast systems as well. So this week, we are going to be joined by Springbok legend, Alliance Test Series and World Cup winner and former World Rugby Player of the Year, Skalk Berger. So we're really looking forward to talking to him later on in the show. However, first up, we'll chat about the Autumn Nations. So it has come to an end and Ireland played Scotland at the weekend. And I suppose we can take some positives out of that game and out of that win, Ian.
Yeah, certainly. You know, the game started off, it was challenging enough. Scotland had loads of momentum at the start, but Ireland hung in there and were only, I think, 6 points down, and it could easily have been 15 or 20 if Ireland had lost their head. There was a lot of pressure on them going into the game. Obviously, the second half of the Georgian game was disappointing, came off the back of a loss against England. And, you know, there was a lot of expectation that Ireland had to go out and win well. And to go behind early definitely put pressure on them, but they didn't lose their heads. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about what they've been doing in training that hasn't quite clicked in games, but I think we can take huge confidence from the, you know, the last 50 minutes of the game. And looking forward to the Six Nations, you definitely think that that's, you know, something that they can really build on going into that first game in Cardiff against Wales.
Absolutely. You know, we have to be positive and look at what they did well. However, they started pretty slowly and we have to face it that they've had a pretty good record against Scotland in the last few years. You know, I think in the last five games, they've got 5 wins out of 5 against Scotland. Eddie O'Sullivan slated Scotland, you know, saying that they were almost, you know, more, they shouldn't be as positive as they are and that Scotland actually aren't as good as they think they are. So was that win, you know, are we giving Ireland more praise than we should be considering they're playing against a Scottish team that probably aren't as strong as we think they are?
Yeah, I think playing at home will back ourselves against anyone. And, you know, Scotland aren't at the top table with the likes of France, England, even New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, Argentina. You know, they're probably the second tier down from that. But they're a very competitive side. They beat Wales away recently, which is a really good result. They beat France last year, which was, you know, we've all seen how good the French are in the last 12 months. I think key guys missing for them definitely affects them. The likes of Finn Russell adds a huge amount. But they're a very well coached side and you know, they bring great physicality. Like I guarantee that those Irish lads were good and sore today after that game. They didn't know that they were in a real rugby match. And you know, they ultimately pulled away in the last quarter. But that was a tight game and I think any side that goes out and beats it, Scotland in an international, knows all about it.
Yeah, it's never an easy win against them, you're right. I suppose one thing that we can, as a nation, take from the Autumn Nations was the amount of young, new players, new caps, guys that were given the experience to play against the likes of Georgia or against Scotland or against Italy. You know, games that, yes, it's an important series and it's good to get games under your belt, but it isn't, at the end of the day, the Guinness Six Nations. It's, you know, it's effectively just, you know, warm-up games. And that's one positive, is that there was a lot of really good young players making their mark and stamping their mark down on an Irish jersey.
Yeah, certainly. And it's the first time that we've seen the coach's selection over, you know, a number of weeks. And you kind of get an idea of who they really like. And the biggest tell of that is always selection. You know, words might be said in the media, that are complimentary. But ultimately, if the guy isn't getting picked, you figure out quite quickly what the coaches actually think of him. And you can see there with the likes of Hugo Keenan, Kaelin Dyers, Bundy Akie got lots of game time. Porter again got a huge amount of game time. You know, three of the four of them are all younger guys: Porter, Dyers, and Keenan. And you can see how much they grew throughout this series. And there's no doubt that they'll be an integral part of the Irish team going forward into the Six Nations.
And I suppose some of it is just about timing. Like, would Keenan have been in there if Larmour was fit and injury free? Would Bundy have been starting if, you know, Ringrose had been injured up until the last game, and Henshaw had been injured up until the last game, and obviously Ringrose out injured as well? So we've had quite a lot of injuries, and I suppose the guys that stood up, like Hugo Keenan and like Bundy, and you know, they've put their mark on the jersey, and I'm glad to see that they have taken the opportunity and not shied away from the challenge really of playing for Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. The injuries are part of the game, and a big battle is keeping yourself fit. But you know, when a coach is looking to pick the team, the first thing he's going to look at is who's fit and who's injured, and there's no chance that the injured guy is getting picked. And ultimately, it's about the other guys stepping up and taking their opportunity. So when the other guy gets back from his injury, that it makes a really tough decision for the coach to make to put him back into the side. And I definitely think, you know, someone like Kaelin Dyers is probably nailed down a spot in that back row now that you wouldn't have thought probably at the start of the season. And similar, like Hugo Keenan's been great at the back. I'm sure you've been very impressed with him over the number of games. You know, Jacob's got his opportunity at 15 now, and it's probably going to take a few big performances from someone for them to look at something else, because he's in there now. He's got the experience. The guys are used to playing with him around him. So no, it is. It has been very interesting, in that sense, with selection and seeing who's really stepped up to the mark.
Yeah, I think with Jacob as well, he got quite a lot of stick that first game. Wasn't it the first game where he, you know, had quite a few drop balls, got turned over quite a bit, knocked balls on the try and everything. But I think he's found his place in there at full back. You know, he's grown into the position, and that's why games like these are so important, that it gives you opportunities to play at this high level, under pressure, in a high pressure situation, against the best in the world. And he hadn't, I suppose, bar playing with Ulster this year in the Guinness Pro 14, he hadn't actually quite a lot of experience playing at 15. So that experience that he got throughout the Autumn Nations is invaluable to him and so many other guys on the field. Like you said, Kaelin Dyers, was it two man of the match performances he got throughout this Autumn Nations? Maybe three, I'm not sure exactly. But someone of his age to stand up to that, you know, it's phenomenal what he's doing and what he has done in the last few weeks. And to start in a competitive back row with the likes of Peter O'Mahony, Will Connors, CJ Stander, you know, Jack Owen was there. You know, there's so many guys that could be there, and we're constantly talking about the competition in the back row. Josh Vanderfleer, another one. You know, it's so competitive, and he really did make a mark on the campaign. There's so many guys too that have to come in for the Guinness Six Nations. You know, like Tadhg Furlong's been injured. Larmour might be back from his injury. You know, there's so many other guys that will be fighting for a position come January when they're back in camp again.
Yeah, certainly. Like, just on your points about Jacob, I couldn't agree with you anymore. You know, he's definitely grown into it in the last few games. It was definitely a tough day for him against France, and he'd be the first to say that himself. But I think as well, we've got to look back and see what's come before him. And you know, Rob set incredibly high standards there. He was rock solid at the back, probably the best in the world under the high ball. You know, Jacob's come in now, and he's aspiring to be as good as Rob was in the air and covering the backfield, but he'll definitely offer more in other areas. And we've got to be appreciative of that. If he drops the odd high ball, you know, maybe what he's offering us with his carry game, people will start to see, you know, the positives that gives to the team. And I thought that was a huge part of what he did against Scotland at the weekend. You know, his ability to find soft shoulders, keep pumping his legs, create fast ball, and you know, create soft edges for the team, I thought was huge for when it started to click for Ireland. And you know, he'll certainly be a big part of what we'll be doing over the next few weeks in Ulster and leading on to the Six Nations for Ireland.
Absolutely. And I suppose chatting about the Guinness Six Nations, you know, if they get that first win against Wales, you know, that'll be a great start. And it's all about momentum when it comes to games like these.
Yeah, certainly. You Wales haven't been at, you know, hitting their stripes over the last few weeks. You know, even the Italian game at the weekend, it was very close contest up to about 60 minutes, and then ultimately the Welsh pulled away in the last 20. But for a period of time, it looked like the Italians might actually get on top of them and get a win. They're definitely a side in transition. It hasn't clicked yet with the new coach, so it'll be interesting to see what the next few months brings there, you know, how much they get to bring everyone together in camp. Even whether there's supporters or not is a big part of what's going to happen in the Millennium Stadium. You know, Wales with a full Millennium Stadium is a very different proposition to playing them without any supporters there. But no, look, I think it's important for Ireland that we don't look past that first game. You know, obviously, you win that, it tees up everything from a triple crown to a grand slam. If you lose that, you're very much behind the eight ball, and then you're going into play, I think it's France in the second game. So, look, they'll be under no illusions, but that will be a tough, tough challenge.
And I'm sure we will chat about the Guinness Six Nations a lot more between now and then. There's quite a lot of rugby to be played between now and then. So we'll be back with Shock Burger in part two.
House of Rugby Ireland. Tell us what you think by comment and rating us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Google Podcasts.
We had Victor Matfield and John de Villiers on the show earlier on this year, and we are delighted to welcome another Springbok legend in Shock Burger. Former World Player of the Year, Lions Series winner and also a World Cup winner. So, Skalk, do you ever get sick of an accolade like that?
No, I don't think you do. You know, obviously, once you retire, you become so much, much better. So, like, I've only recently retired, just over a year now, so I'm not as good as some of my counterparts that's been on here. But there's a good South African contingent, and I guess they got the same warm welcome that I got. So, thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're showing us some beautiful views there over in a very sunny South Africa, a lot different to the weather we have here in Ireland today.
I'm not envious of you guys whatsoever, but it's beautiful down here. Another tough day in Africa. This is the southern of my left shoulder here. This is that's Newlands Ravine you're looking at. So, you know, it's the southern suburb side of Table Mountain. So you guess where I'm at. I'm close to Newlands Rugby Stadium. That's where I live. So awesome this side. And I mean, I saw some photos of what you guys were playing rugby in today. So I'd rather be, I'm here in my board shorts and my short hat on, been in the swimming pool, been on the beach this morning. So sorry to spoil your weather for you, but it's been awesome. Yeah, and we're ready for summer holidays, so can't wait.
Sounds good. Skalk, what have you been up to since you retired from rugby? Obviously taking in the good weather at the moment. What kind of, have you stayed in touch with the rugby world, or have you taken a break completely and stepped back from it?
Yeah, I actually was planning on having like a year sabbatical. So finished June last year at Saracens. Obviously, our season ended up with massive success and came back to South Africa. First thing I had is because I came back with two South African boys that was completely, you know, English. They were Poms. So the first thing I did is took them through Africa, you know, let them catch their first fish, you know, let them pull a shot off on a rifle, trying to de-palm them and get them more South African because before they go to school. So I did a full trip through Namibia, you know, about three, four weeks, about 6,500 kilometers. Got back, settled in our house that was rented out for 5 years since we were gallivanting around. And then I got an unexpected call to do some punditry for Supersport. So they got me on board, and obviously it was quite nice to be a part of, you know, the punditry team to do the World Cup where South Africa won. And it's much easier relaying a message to South Africa when the Springboks win the World Cup to when it is they lose in a final. And I've carried on with that. And I've joined one of my very good friends in a property business. So he's sort of taken me under the wing. Had a lot to learn this year. This year wasn't easy for business as a whole, especially in the property business. And then me and John de Villiers started a little, you know, TV show called Use It or Lose It. We've got about 25 followers at present, I think it is, maybe 26. So please follow us if you do. Yeah, we'd like to get up to 30 before the end of the year.
So if any of our listeners want to give them a follow, they might get up to 30 by the end of today's podcast. You started off, I suppose, your father, Skalk Burger, also, I suppose you had that pressure of growing up with that name. Did you ever find it hard to live up to the reputation that he had or the path that he had paved for you?
Yeah, so obviously my old man played a long time at Western Province, also had a stint in Eastern Province, and then back to Western Province, but also played for the Boks. So whenever that happens in South Africa, you know, rugby mad country, there is a certain amount of pressure. But I think I was the right personality for it. You know, I was sort of always daydreaming as a kid, you know, like in my own little bubble, so to speak. So when it came down to playing rugby, you sort of just pitched up and did it. You know, my first love actually at school was cricket. So I finished with a cricket contract. So, you know, I was talented at both as rugby as a cricketer, but like cricket accolades just came a bit faster when I was younger. It was only in my second year where I swapped to rugby, so swapped to pro rugby, and then, you know, that was quite an exciting time for me. But yeah, I guess, you know, one thing it does help you is to prepare for certain, you know, big moments. You know, having a dad that's already been there, so especially in the beginning of my career, it was quite nice to have him as a sounding board. And then later on, you sort of just follow your own head and, you know, make a few mistakes along the way. But, you know, it's awesome in South Africa. We had quite a few players, like Ruan Pienaar, for example. You guys would know him well. His dad, Gacy Pienaar, played with my dad in the mid-80s, early to mid-80s. We had John de Villiers, old man. He played lock, actually, for Western Province with my dad in the beginning of my dad's career. So there's quite a few second-generation rugby players coming through in South Africa, so it must have something to do with it.
Did you ever feel pressured to choose rugby, or did it happen naturally? I know you said, obviously, cricket and rugby were your two sports, but was there ever a pressure? Because, obviously, you know, you're almost expected to play rugby if your father is, you know, has a name like he has.
I reckon if I came out, like, you know, 5'4", really fast, no one probably would have said he's got to be a rugby player. But because you come out 6'4" and you weigh 110 kilograms, you know, everyone's going to go, he's a rugby player.
Yeah.
You know? So it sort of adds to the hype. And then, obviously, I loved rugby. Yeah, just as much as cricket. So always, you know, played a certain style. Just, you know, wanted to touch the ball, wanted to get stuck in. So, you know, once you start throwing yourself around in South Africa, you know, everyone's going like, oh, he's going to play rugby big time. But then it's so hard to make in South Africa. We've got so much talent, you know, so much talent. And I think especially now where so many players are based overseas, I just saw the Scotland spreadsheet, score sheet, and it was Duan van der Merwe scoring a try and Jaco van der Walt kicking all the conversions. I mean, that doesn't sound Scottish, does it? So, I mean, it's all South Africans playing all abroad. And I think we just showcases how much talent we've got. So even when I started out, you know, made the swap from cricket to rugby, you never once, you know, firstly think actually you're good enough. And secondly, there's so many good players in and around your age group, let alone the senior players involved, that you're actually going to get a chance. And then luckily for me, I got, you know, a few lucky breaks, you know, through players being injured, and then all of a sudden you get a chance. And, you know, before you knew it, you played 20, 30, 40 test matches, and the players that was probably better than you at an age grade level just, you know, lacked on experience, and you had a head start. And for that, you know, obviously some of it's got to do with me, because, you know, you can't just, you know, get a test cap for the Boks and sort of think you're going to get another one. You know, you're never incumbent. You never own the jersey. You know, you're just a custodian of a jersey that's going to live long after you finish. So once I got, you know, my foot in, you know, I wanted to play more. And then all of a sudden, through experience, you just become so much better than, you know, your peers at the time.
Scott, when you talk about, like showcasing South African talent, there's been a fair bit of talk and excitement about some of the super sides joining. Has there been much talk or excitement about it in South Africa?
I think, you know, it's twofold. So first of all, I think when we speak about Super Rugby and when we reminisce about Super Rugby, we reminisce about the old Super Rugby where everyone chewed in, you know, the Super 12, you know, the one we started playing in when I was younger, the best competition in the world, run for 3 months, best players in the world on showcase. You know, started in February and ended, you know, in May. Of late, Super Rugby, I think, sort of lost its way. You know, we expanded to 18 teams, Super 18. We also, you know, started running over 8 months. You know, we cut it down to Super 15. And I think, you know, the catalyst of all of this was obviously COVID, where we had to cancel the tournament through, obviously, the tough travel schedules. But I think over the years, what's happened down, it's become a bit of a watered-down tournament through South African sides, obviously having so many players playing abroad. You know, the Kiwi sides are very strong. We all know Australia's got some rugby struggles, especially in their franchise rugby. Argentina has done reasonably well, and the Japan side that could never really access their best players. So I think they lost the, you know, they lost the fan, they lost the crowd. The guys found it too complicated to follow, too much travel in between, too much time off. If you in Sydney, for example, and they all share the same stadium, the SFS Sydney Football Stadium, and if you can watch a rugby league team there for 8 months in a row, pretty much every other weekend, you know, Waratahs can play the 1 week and then 2 months later they can play there again. So it's quite hard to follow as a fan because we all, you know, we're creatures of habit. You want to go to your stadium, you want to watch it. So I think South Africa is ready for a change and it's coming to the north. And I think it's going to be massively exciting. It's going to be a new challenge. Obviously, we play a certain style. So for all of you guys, it will be exposure to how we as South Africans play. And also for us as South Africans, I think we're quite excited about breaking the mold, you know, breaking the stigma about Super Rugby or Super Touch, as it's often referred to, and actually playing in your conditioning, in your conditions. Obviously, I think our strengths as South Africans are in our athletes and our physical, we can be, our set piece, all things we pride ourselves on. And I think it's going to be exciting to see us move to the north and see how we adapt, because it's going to be an adaptation for our players to travel across, play different times of the year. Same for you guys coming to, you know, some warm places, especially in summer, Durban, you know, Cape Town's all right. You know, we by the ocean, we get this cooling breeze at night. Pretoria is a hard place to play. The old Gauteng, the Lions, super, super hard place to play. So I think whenever there's a change, there comes excitement with it. It's just, you know, how do we actually do this? How do we get it right? And how do we build excitement? Because us as South Africans are ready for the move.
No, certainly. It's really exciting. Yeah, really exciting on our end. And I think if you look at how the league has gone in the last 8 weeks, you know, the Irish sides have dominated it. Now, I know some of the other teams have missed their internationals and that's hurt them hard. But going forward, having the four super sides in from South Africa, I think would make the competition far more competitive. Like, obviously, you've played in both the Premiership and you've played in Super Rugby. How do you think the super teams would fare if they're in the Premiership, or, you know, comparing to the product that you played in the UK?
I think the Premier, I played in two different phases of my career. So one I played obviously when I was younger and then older in the Premiership. But I think they're actually quite similar in certain ways where they're so competitive. So Super 12 for me was the most competitive competition in the world. By that I mean from bottom to top, there was not much in the teams. You know, whether you finish sixth on the log, first or 12th, it's so tight. And I think the Premiership had that same feeling, where all the teams are so competitive. Yes, maybe towards the end of the season when one team sort of had a few injuries and, you know, they sort of resigned to the fact that they might be relegated. Yes, then you can roll them over. But certainly not the case for the first 8 months of the year. It's so competitive. And I think, you know, South African teams will bring that depth to pro rugby. You know, I don't think there's often going to be a case where they're going to roll over as easily as, say, maybe a team that's depleted through numbers. So it is hard. It's going to be hard for us to go there and put four good teams, because we have got a massive group of players every year leaving to play in the north or playing in Japan. I think from the World Cup squad that won it, you know, 33, if you take Trevor Nakane and Jesse Krul was injured, already 18 of them is based abroad. So only, you know, only the rest is stuck here. So we do lose a lot of players, and I think this will increase with the exposure they will get in the north. But still, I think we've got so much talent on display here, and we produce so much talent year on year that I think they'll be very, very competitive, and that's always good for a competition.
I think so. I think the Guinness Pro 14 has been in the last few weeks slightly, I think people have lost a little bit of interest in it because, you know, the Irish teams are dominating it so much, and the Autumn Nations Cup has, I suppose, been the reason that that's been the case. You know, the Italy teams, the Italian teams have really been, you know, finding it really difficult, and especially the Scottish teams as well, you know, with their internationals away. So I think it will add a bit of interest and a bit of, you know, people will be eager to tune in to these games because it's something different. It's unexpected, and we don't know what the South Africans will bring, but we do know that they will bring a different style of rugby and a different style of physicality that I think spectators will be really excited to see.
But I guess it's competition, right? So whenever there's good competition, everyone tunes in to watch it. If you look Formula One at the moment, like you've got Mercedes dominating it, it sort of gets stale after a while. And I think Super Rugby went the same way with, you know, all the All Black sides dominating, New Zealand teams dominating it for so long. You know, we need to, as South Africans, get across there and actually make a big impact. You know, the Irish sides are so strong, well managed, a lot of depth, a lot of international players, big squads. We've got smaller squads, but like we'll get across there and be itching to sink our teeth into this new competition. So, you know, hopefully for us, you know, we can come across there and have at least two of the four teams super competitive in the first year, and then hopefully build on our depth to get four competitive sides. Because that was always our issue in Super Rugby. We always had one or two teams that was up there for long periods of time. And then in between that, we had some teams battling to actually be competitive at Super Rugby, especially towards the end of it.
So I can see that the Bulls are going really well in the Currie Cup. They'll obviously be one of the two stronger sides that you're talking about. Who else do you think can really, really compete in the Guinness Pro 14?
Well, I think the Bulls will be the stronger suit. They've got Jake White in there. They've got a nice blend of between a lot of new youngsters playing really exciting, nice rugby. But then they've also got like Mornay Steyn sort of marshalling the troops, Dwayne Vermeulen. And I just think, you know, they are on the right path. You know, they've got a lot of talent there. It's a strong, traditional stronghold of South African rugby up there in Pretoria. I think it will really suit the style they play. They play reasonably conservative, solid set piece, but then also they've got an ability to crack the game open through, you know, transition turnovers. So they've been by far the best team, look the most professional outfit at the moment. Then there's a lot of talent down in Cape Town where I'm from. Unfortunately, you know, we've had some boardroom issues here down there, Western Province. We're moving away from Newlands. We're moving to a new stadium. Cape Town Stadium was a phenomenal venue, by the way. Everyone will thoroughly enjoy going there. But like they've got some issues behind closed doors. Lions, I think not so much. So I'm going to go... Sharks has got a lot of talent, and I think they'll be hard to beat in Durban, not abroad. So Bulls, Stormers will be my favourite pick to really make it tough for you guys. Also, the Stormers has got one of the best packs of forwards for any club side. So if they can keep them together, they'll be competitive. But Bulls, far and away, the best side we've got.
So Scott, that links in really well to our Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame section. And this week we asked our followers on Twitter if they had any good questions for you. And Pat Curran asked if Schalk was in favour of the South African Super Rugby franchises joining the Guinness Pro 14 and how he thinks they get on. So you've almost answered that, but if you were to sum that up again, just for Pat Curran, who's newly welcomed into the Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame, give us a short answer on how you think they'll go.
Yeah, Pat, I'm definitely... answered already, but I'm in favour of it. I think there's a good change for us as South Africans to go up north. One travel, one timeline. We can all watch all the games. We don't have to wake up early mornings to watch, you know, the Stormers play in Dunedin, which is 11-hour time difference. So now we're all in favour, and we're also ready for a change. You know, it's time for us to go up north and see if we can be competitive. And maybe for us is a big reality check. I think we will be competitive. I don't think we'll get success immediately, because if you think of our Super Rugby careers, us as South African took a while before we started getting success. So I think it'll be hard for us, especially the weather change from South Africa, where it's quite easy, especially tactically and also technically. Our players will have to improve to be competitive in worse conditions, like in the UK, especially this time of the year. So I think it will take us a while, but I think we're going to have at least two very competitive sides every year.
I think Ian is also delighted too that he'll get a few trips to South Africa in the coming years.
I know, especially Cape Town. If all the boys are throbbing. I mean, please just don't, when you go to any zoo, just don't put your hand into the lion cage. I mean, it's not a cat. That's how you get yourself into trouble.
You should be almost telling him to do it to hurt the opposition teams.
I wouldn't mind going over to South Africa and just camping up, stay like end of season tour there, roll into the summer. There'd be nothing better.
Yeah, if you just schedule it so that you have a South African team for the last game of season, so that you can just stay on, be very nice, very nice.
That would be the ideal.
Skalk, you you won World Rugby Player of the Year at just 21 years of age. Were you just a year into your season with the Springboks? That must have been amazing to start your career off in such a manner.
Yeah, I mean, if you think back now, it's a little bit crazy. At the time, you know, these things sort of just happened. You know, I made my debut in 03 at the 2003 Rugby World Cup, and I remember I was nominated to be one of the under 21 Rugby Players of the Year. And Benatinga won at same age as me, but he also went to 2003 Rugby World Cup, and we were actually sitting at the same table. And obviously, Johnny Wilkinson won it, and both of us were sitting there having a few beers, thinking, "Oof, it'll be cool to win this one day." And I mean, 12 months later, there was I, you know, picking it up. So crazy. I mean, we didn't have a good 2003. Me and Jacques Fourie was two of the youngsters, sort of, you know, made it through. We had that horrible camp before the World Cup. We weren't playing well. We had no chance of winning the World Cup. And then Jake White came in, and we had a lot of success with him at junior levels. You know, we won in 2002. We won, the Junior World Cup, and he took a lot of guys from the 98 group, John Smith, and that was sort of the basis of the team. It was 98 and 2002, and then brought back some older men. You know, brought back Osterhunt and Percy Montgomery from abroad, or also off the farm actually, and Percy from abroad. And then he told me, "I'm going to start." You know, I'm starting open side early on in the year. I said, "Listen, you get yourself playing well, and you're going to start." And we started playing against Ireland. Actually, as my first start up in Bloemfontein, we got a nice win there, and then came down to Cape Town. And I was obviously so pumped for the game. You know, playing at my home stadium, I grew up on the stadium watching my dad do captain's run here. Now I'm starting a test match for the Box against Ireland. And you're never going to play poorly. 50,000 people down in Cape Town, and got a man of the match performance, and that sort of set the tone for the rest of the year. And when you're that young and you're playing well, you know, it feels like you can't do no wrong. You just carry on playing. I got got a little bit carried away, as I often did in my career, and got a few yellow cards towards the end of the season. One against Ireland was harsh, though. It was very harsh at the old Lansdowne Road. And I got another one. And I got another one for putting a high shot on Colin Chavis, which also hard. I mean, just his hair, you know, it was going everywhere, his head. But besides that, it was a cracking year. And then obviously, you know, to tap it off with all the accolades, you know, that was a little bit overwhelming at that age, at 21. But what it does do, though, is just frees you up to go and play some more rugby. And that's the way I always saw it. You know, I've always just wanted to enjoy the game. That was my main focus. So I always think I had a nice perspective, but definitely achieving a lot when you're young, you know, it does free you up and does relax you a bit just to have a crack.
It sounds like the perfect start almost to your career, and I'm glad that Ireland has some good memories as well, that your first cap and that man of the match performance. Not that we're too happy about that, but it's a nice start for you anyway. However, not long after that, very early on into your career, you got a really bad injury. Did you think it would be career threatening, or was it as bad as you expected? What was injured, and how long did the initial rehab take?
Yeah, so it was 2006 against Scotland. So we played the first test match up in Durban, and then went down to Port Elizabeth to play the second test match. I can remember, it was like me and John Smith trying to tackle some bloke. I don't know, at that stage, you know, just flying around. So I wanted to smash someone. And before I got to him, John got to him. So instead of me tackling with my shoulder, I actually hit him with the head. And, you know, what transpired after that is, like, I finished the game, got back 1 o'clock, and just started feeling horrendous, you know, neck pain, you know, can't move, sort of stuck in this position. Went to the doctor's room. Next morning, scan in Port Elizabeth, and then flew down to Cape Town. And when I got to Cape Town, they obviously had the results of the scan. And I basically, with that impact, you know, burst the disc. So I had a prolapse of the disc. And that was sort of scary back then. No one really had neck fusions. You know, it wasn't the done thing. Obviously, with neck fusions, there can be complications. My biggest issue was, like, because there was so much fluid pushing down on the nerve, I sort of lost all strength on my left arm. And to this day, I've got no feeling in these two fingers, although I've got strength. They're completely numb. And that's the first time where you sort of get a reality check, where you think, okay, hold on, you know, I'm not invincible. I've been flying around for 4 years now. And at that stage, the bigger risk you take, the more accolades you get. You know, the better is the outcome. And that's the first time where you sort of think, okay, hold on. You know, I'm mortal. I'm human. Yeah, I'm just another bloke trying to play rugby. And I think, you know, you're young and you crack on. And luckily for me, in the first game I came back was actually a warm-up game against the Bulls. So I was out for, 7 months. Came back. I know, like, the turnaround times now is crazy fast. I think they can play in 4 months. But back then, we were quite conservative. And the first guy I had to tackle was Darnie Rousseau, big old Darnie Rousseau. And he ran at me. I put a shot on him, and I didn't feel anything. I was like, okay, I'm all right. I can crack on with this, you know, because if you can tackle Darnie Rousseau, you pretty much can tackle anything. You can tackle a bus. And then you started playing. But then I also realized that, you know, you've got to improve your game on other areas. You know, you've got to evolve, because if I'm going to be flying around like this, you know, I'm not going to have longevity out the game, you know. So then we started working on a few other things, you know, a few line-out skills, a few kickoff skills, a few different things, just to try and evolve your game. And it took a long time to actually improve it. But, you know, we got there in the end.
What elements of your game did you work on specifically to try and improve?
So, like, back then in South Africa, we were very one-dimensional, especially. And I always tried to, like, you know, I always believed, like, in passing forwards. You know, you watch the Kiwi sides, and they were, when we were younger, like, they also had a lot of width through their structure they played. And they had long passes and big backs. That was pretty much the difference between them and anyone else. But obviously, we as South Africans were quite physical and imposing, so we could match up to their physicality. And then they had to find another point of difference. And that came through their structure in close quarters through passing forwards. Like watching this autumn Nations Cup now, there's lovely touches by forwards, and it's all through the structure that was created. So, like, I just started working on passing tip-ons, up the backs. It just took a while for a structure to fall in place, and that structure came when Eddie Jones joined us in 2007 as attacking consultant. So all of a sudden, we had a little structure in and around, and by that stage, you know, I had a bit of a head start on the rest of the boys, because, you know, I played cricket, so I did have a decent skill set. But now all of a sudden there was a structure where I could sort of express, you know, little short passes, you know, little stuff out the back. So, you know, once that came, then all of a sudden it looked like my game sort of changed overnight. It didn't. There was just a structure in place. But, like, I really enjoyed the finer stuff of it, you know, like kickoffs, for example. You know, even when I joined Saracens, you know, we started a little kickoff challenge, you know, and I absolutely loved taking kickoffs, you know, all those little things. Things I hated was cleaning rucks and practicing how to tackle and scrum and mauls. You know, that all because all that is just guts, you know. It's like, chuck your heart under the table, check how hard you are. But the finer stuff, I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed training that. But don't ask me to clean a ruck. I cleaned enough.
You're talking to two backs here who completely agree with you, so that's fine.
I know. I know. You guys, I mean, I wish I was a bit nimbler. My second life, I'm going to come back in a smaller, nimbler, a little bit of a faster frame and wear a big digit on the back. But unfortunately, that wasn't for me to have.
It wasn't. So after working on yourself and, I suppose, working on those, not weaknesses, but you changed your game, I suppose, based on that injury and to better your performances. And you got picked for that 2004, the next World Cup. But you ended up getting a 4-match ban, which was then reduced down to a 2-match ban. So that's not an ideal start after coming back from injury.
So, I mean, it's probably a trend through my career. Like, you, I sort of overstepped the boundary a few times. But in 07, we had a good build-up. And, you know, it was one of those things where we truly believed that we could obviously win a World Cup, although winning a World Cup's a lot harder than I think anyone can describe. Otherwise, New Zealand would probably have won it 5 times by now, and they've only won it 3 times. You know, it's a tough thing to do, and you need a lot of stuff going away. And for sure, we had a lot of luck, but we also, I guess, was the form team at that World Cup. We played some phenomenal rugby, and I think case in point was our pool game against England, you know, the 36-0 game, where we just put on perfect rugby performance the way we wanted to play. South Africans needed to play, and that's important for us, because we are unique in that space. You know, we play a little bit differently. We played against Samoa, and I can just remember the game being so fiery, you know, so worked up. And I guess 5 minutes into the game, and Butchie James was fly off, and he doesn't shirk away from any contact. But we were lining up quite wide on defense. We had this little up and in thing we're doing, like quite a lot of line speed. And opposite me was Henry Tuilagi. Now, if I tell you this bloke was wider than he was tall. He was probably twice as wide as he was tall, weighing probably 145 kgs. And he was like the lineup trigger. So it was on the halfway, and he was lined up on the 22. And when he started chugging, the lineup ball came. So Butchie was basically lined up 15 meters wide, and he was, there's no ways I'm tackling this. There's no way. Skok, it's all yours. Let's leave him the gap, and then maybe you can tackle from the side. But anyway, he just basically saw the gap, turned to me, and then just ran straight at me. And I sort of got him all right. But then poor Dali Rousseau was on the inside, and we absolutely steamrolled. And it was like watching like one of those, you know, primary school games where the one kid's just so much bigger and the other one's got massive attitude, but he's on his back. And then he's poking his legs in between his legs to try and trip him over. That's exactly what it was. So obviously after that, the game got a bit fired up and I got a bit carried away because I never really shirked away from the physical stuff. And then, you know, got a tackle or a challenge or like, it's so clumsy. If you look back now, you think, what were you doing? But like, it was all just because I was fired up and got banned for 4 games initially, which was a disaster because that was pretty much your World Cup. And then luckily got reduced to 2 games, and then which actually worked out all right for me. So, you know, a bit of luck, but also I think whenever you make these mistakes, you can't, there's no regrets. You can't take them back, can you? But you definitely learn from them. You have to learn from them. And, you know, there's been a few of those learnings in my career, so I'm sure you'll get to a few others as this interview continues.
Do you care to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, 09 comes next, doesn't it? So, 07, 09, the Lions. I mean, what an experience for all of us. You know, we all remember watching 1997. I think all of us can remember, you know, Gibbs bouncing Os Durant. I think it was in Durban. You know, the box losing. 12 years later, we get an opportunity. You know, it's more rare to play against the Lions for us than it is to play in a World Cup. You know, it's one of those moments that's there. So, obviously, 09 came across. Jake White finished in 07, 08. We had mixed success with Peter de Villiers. In 09, I think we got a lot of things right before the season started. You know, a lot of things where a new coach comes on board. You know, he's got his ideas. He wants to change a stigma or way you play. But I think in 07, we got a lot right for South Africans. And then 09, I think we were back on that sort of trend. I got in, missed the first test. I was injured, actually. Got injured in Super Rugby. Missed the first one. Stranded on 49 test matches. All I want to do is play my 50th test match. Second, obviously, first test match. Box, you know, dominated the first 60 minutes of the game, and then the Lions had a very good last 20. We knew the second test match was going to be hard. Main focus, obviously, was just sort of more of the same for us, you know. So we obviously set pieces dominated you guys. Obviously, physicality is a non-negotiable. So would be the Lions team talk, you know. It's all about physicality. And, you know, sort of 50th test match, a lot happening, families up there, just one of those moments where if you look back now, you know, I gouge 10 seconds into, not even 5 seconds into the game, Luke Fitzgerald, what was he doing in the ruck, by the way? I'm just joking.
As a winger.
In all seriousness. Yeah, in all seriousness, you know, I mean, stupid. You know, you get things wrong. And again, you know, if you look back now, it's, you know, overhyped. Moment probably got a little bit too big. Because never in your life are you going to enter a game and think, shit, I'm going to, you know, I got someone. You just overstep the mark through too much build-up. You want to make too big of an impact too soon. You know, these things happen. So, obviously, I hope that doesn't detract from the fact that it was one of the best test matches ever. You know, that second test match delivered in spades and obviously culminated in Morne Steyn slotting a 60-meter penalty to win the test match in a test series for South Africa. But yeah, a little bit bittersweet for me. You know, I spent about, the following week just getting slated everywhere, and then got a little 2-month sabbatical, so I was banned for 2 months. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, like you get it wrong. You know, there was no intention before the game. It's just, you know, you learn from those things. And I think after that, you sit back and think, okay, hold on. Where are we going? You know, what is the focus? Where should you move on? And I think whenever you lose big games or you make mistakes like I did there, you come back a better player from that.
Yeah, certainly. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I don't think any player goes into a game, you know, with the intention of eye gouging someone or, you know, hurting an opponent, like, because ultimately, like, what's your end goal? Like, even it actually happened again in the Scotland-Ireland game yesterday, one of the Scottish players accused one of the Irish players of gouging. And I was just delighted to see that nothing came of it, because it's very damaging, you know, to your career if you get accused of something like that. And it's just something that kind of goes against the culture of the game. But, you know, I think when you're fighting for every inch, you can get caught up in a moment, and you know, it can look one way, but I think the intention behind it is very different. On a lighter note, Skulk, all the Lions lads talk of that tour so highly, and they said it was kind of the last of the real rugby tours. You know, the social media wasn't too big at the time. For you, on the other side, how enjoyable was it in your own home country?
Oh, it's so special. It's so special. I think it's also one of the best supported, just from, you know, demographically where we sit. So we obviously fast forward to next year, where it's Lions again coming 2021. Yes, there's a bit of a cloud hanging over whether it's going to continue or not. We all hope it is. You know, if at worst it gets postponed for a little bit. But like, we as South Africans can't wait. And you travel, what we love about it as South Africans, we're a rugby mad country. Everyone watches rugby. We grow up with a rugby ball. The first present you get from your dad, I guess, is a rugby ball. And what we can't wait for is the Lions to come here. And it's the only long tour that exists in rugby. And South Africans, rugby is a community-based sport. It's a club sport. Everyone does it on weekends, whether you're not playing for the Stormers or not. You're still going to your local club. The whole family goes and everyone plays rugby. Everyone runs around on pitches. Afterwards, beforehand, afterwards is beers. And that's what's the nice thing about the Lions tour. People get to interact with the team. They identify with the Lions coming here. And then on top of that, their local team, their local club side gets to play against the Lions, which they will talk about forever and ever. And everyone's going to remember that one big tackle he put in, or the try he scored against the Lions. I mean, that's the biggest happening that can happen in anyone's life here. I mean, they only come here every 12 years. So I guess the Lions is example, I think, for world rugby and what a long tour could be for everyone, really. You know, if we change the structure from these little week-in, week-out tours like we do down here in the Southern Hemisphere to a proper old tour where you get the whole rugby community to buy in, I mean, it's the best thing. So, you know, South African tour, I think, is right up there just because we are so passionate about it. It's such a big sport. It's a big country. We've got a lot to see. You know, even from the Kruger down to the Winelands here in Cape Town, it's so diverse between Afrikaans, English. We've got 11 official languages. So, yeah, I think it's one of the best tours to make with. And let's hope that, you know, by that stage, the world's, you know, a little bit easier to get around in. And we've got a little bit of less regulations, you know, to comply with. Because a Lions tour in South Africa will be awesome. And whenever South Africa, you know, get one of these big tournaments, if you think of 2010 Soccer World Cup and before that, you know, 95 Rugby World Cup or 96 Africa Cup of Nations, the whole country rallies around it and they really, really enjoy it. And they put on the best foot forward and they really entertain their host with absolute warmth.
I just think the South African supporters, you know, they're very similar to the Irish in that sense. They're brilliant for getting behind their team, and they're very welcoming people. I've been lucky enough to tour South Africa and be I was on a family holiday there, and I loved my time there. Found the people so warm, and as you said, there's so much to see there. So yeah, please God that the tour does go ahead, and I think it will be, you know, the highlight of 2021.
Yeah, I think we all echo your thoughts. And I think the big thing here is everyone's fans. You know, everyone loves the game so much. So, you know, that really separates it, you know, from other countries. You know, not often do you travel to a country where rugby is such a big thing. You know, it's normally, you know, a little bit behind other sports, where, you know, South Africa is one of those countries where it's really the premium sport. You know, although the national sport's still soccer, it's a premium sport here in South Africa.
I'm just going to echo what Ian just said there in relation to it's the fans. And the great thing about the South African tour is that the time difference is so easily available and readily available to, I suppose, the entire world. And especially for, obviously, the British and Irish Lions, the time difference makes that tour easily watchable for everyone around the country and around the UK, which adds to that excitement too, in that there's a lot more hype around it. And is that excitement building already in South Africa about the tour?
I mean, we're doing like a few, you know, normal old corporate gigs here. The only thing they can talk about is the Lions. You know, the Lions is the biggest thing happening in South Africa over the next 12 months. That, you know, and don't forget, you know, the exchange rate. You know, it's very, very cheap for you guys to come down here and have beer and have wine and have food and have steaks. And then obviously we've got the climate. You know, the climate is also special. But yeah, South Africans are absolutely thriving. Just remember, you know, we haven't seen the Springboks play. You know, the last time, you know, we would have seen the Springboks play in South Africa was our last test match we played here was against, I think it was Australia, maybe, you know, what was that, June 2019? You know, no international rugby this year. Yes, we're getting some domestic rugby without crowds. So that is, as you know, it's not the same. It's a little bit different. Everyone's sitting in their lounges watching the Bulls and Stormers play. Like they did 2 weekends ago. It's not the same. It's not an outing. You know, it's not that camaraderie, not that feeling, not the smell of going to Newlands watching a test match. So the Lions is massive for South Africans. They're craving to have live sport. They're craving to have the Lions, you know, the best, biggest tour in rugby to come to South Africa and stay here for 6 weeks and play against everyone. And then on top of that, you get your 3 test matches. So they can't wait.
Yeah, it's been a real shame in the... you know, in the year after winning the World Cup, that you haven't, that the national team hasn't been able to play. You know, I was talking to Marcel Kutsia in the club about it. And, you know, every game that South Africa would have played after the World Cup would have been a huge game because the no matter who they're playing is looking to knock the number one team off their kind of their pedestal. So yeah, I think everyone wants to see that national team back playing as soon as possible.
It's been so weird, hasn't it? Yeah. So, like, obviously, they've gone through their training camps to try and get across to be part of, you know, Test Match Championship. And then, you know, it didn't come through. So, yeah, we were, all of us are a bit disappointed not to see the box. Because also with that, in South Africa goes a lot of, you know, positive reinforcement. You know, like, people forget quickly. You know, we live in a country where, you know, we've got some struggles. You know, we're not isolated in that. And then COVID happens on top of that, which makes it even harder. And then if there's one, you know, place where people can really relax and actually, you know, wear their heart on their sleeves and be proudly South African is when they watch the Springboks play. So unfortunately, we haven't had that opportunity this year, but, you know, next year's coming and maybe the Lions will happen. And then I think, you know, every South African will be supporting.
Will there be pressure on the Springboks to perform and not having had a test game, an international test game in a year, you know, will they be ready for the challenge that awaits them?
Yeah, there's always pressure on the box. I think we've got challenges in between World Cups and that's why we battle to be so consistent because we've got so many players based everywhere. You know, we've got a new head, we've got new coaching staff. Also, we've got a new head of strength and conditioning. And I caught up with him. He's in Cape Town. I caught up with him briefly and he said, I can't believe where everyone's at. You know, they Japan, you know, the island, they Scotland, you know, they in the UK. So it is a challenge for us because you just don't have access to your best players except in a World Cup year. But for next year, you know, all the players will pull in for extended period of time and really fire up for the Lions. You know, everyone's waiting for that. You've got a few older players. You've got Francois Steyn, for example. He's hanging on for that. I think he's imperative to the balance of the bench. You've got Dwayne Vermeulen. All these guys are coming back to South Africa. There's talk about Marshall maybe coming back for next year, although I haven't heard anything. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's massive pressure on the box, but also a brand new coach, which doesn't make it easy.
You played with Siya Kolisi. Tell us a little bit about that and your experience playing with him.
I'm sure you guys have seen it around, but you know when Sia was 14, I think I was playing for the box. So that same week where I got injured, I was telling you guys earlier about when I had the neck problem. And the photo, surfaced when we started playing together. So he joined the Stormers in 2010. So he was obviously a youngster. 2011, he was a youngster. I was a little bit older at the time. And then this photo surfaced of me actually giving Sia, you know, a signature in 2006. You know, at grade P where he went to school. So I've known Sia for ages. And, you know, like when he was younger, like more formative stuff, you know, saying, listen, Sia, let's try and get you a better rugby player. You know, let's try and, you know, make you a better human being. Let's try this. There was no doubt that he was always going to make it. Like, he's super talented. You know, he's super talented. He's gifted. Also, one of the nicest blokes around. You know, he's a really, really nice guy, grounded guy. understands where he comes from. I guess, you know, a lot of light's been, you know, sort of shone on his background. You know, you watch, you know, 2007, you know, final in a pub or Shebeen. But I think, you know, what he's meant for South Africa is imperative. But I think what South Africa needs from him going forward is playing well and playing good rugby. And I think, you know, he's a charismatic leader, which is important in South Africa. You know, we've had statesmen in South Africa, Nelson Mandela. No one forget, you know, how impressive he was for our country and what he meant to us. And Siya, I think, is on similar trend. You know, he means a lot to South Africa. He unites the country, and the Springboks unites South Africa. So I guess we need him to play some proper rugby. We need the Springboks to play good rugby. But, yeah, I know him very well, him and his wife, lovely people. We have each other over often for drinks down in Cape Town. Yeah, it's a small little community we're down here. So it's lovely to know him. And it's lovely to see him doing so well, you know. It's been an absolute pleasure to watch.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, I think it's time for our House of Rugby Challenge. So earlier on, we gave you a heads up about three items we wanted you to talk to us about. So we asked you to get a piece of rugby memorabilia, a jersey that you have swapped and held on to, and something non-rugby that you treasure. So we'll start off with the first one and a piece of rugby memorabilia.
Okay. We know where this heading. You guys, can you read that?
Yeah, that's perfect.
So, yeah, final jersey from 2007. Whenever you're in France for 8 weeks and they basically, you don't speak any word of English, and then you play against the English in the final and every Frenchman speaks English. That's what it was all about. Everyone wanted us to win that one. Obviously, super to be a part of it. Great memories, you know. And then whenever you play at the All Blacks and you've got a All Blacks jumper, I always treasured those ones because they never used to, back in the day, give them out just willy-nilly. They sort of gave it out to when there was your mutual respect and you'll do the same as a Springbok. So greatest rivalry for us, at least, the Springboks, goes back many years. And then yeah, of late, the All Blacks, obviously, you know, they've had the wood on us. But, you know, luckily the box every now and then turn them around. And I was fortunate to do it quite a few times. But I've got a number. We always played a number six jumper. So I've got a couple here. This one's actually Jerry Collins.
Oh, very nice. Very special.
Very nice. You won't see the engraving. It's right at the bottom. And then I've got another one. And it's the same. It's just Jerome Kaner.
Excellent.
So, yeah, they're always special, eh? Especially late night when one or two of your mates have had too much beers. They normally come out in Jerry Collins or Jerome Kaner's All Black jumper and they start making a few tackles on the mates on the couch here, just inside.
Did you have to take them down from the wall?
They don't hit as hard though, yeah. Yeah.
Did you have to take those jerseys down from the wall or are they hidden away now for future?
No, they're hidden away at the moment, but everyone knows my cupboard so well. So, you know, late night, they just sort of open it. And then, you know, we've got everyone. You know, we've got some English jerseys, some Argentinians. I've got a friend from Chile that always loves to wear a few Argentinians jerseys. And then you think the guys who always thought they were hard, you know, the hard men of the pub, they're normally either in my jumpers or, you know, as I mentioned, Jerome Kaner or Jerry Collins' jumpers.
Absolutely. And what is your something non-rugby that you treasure?
I've got an old Defender, a 1997 Defender. A short wheelbase Defender. I absolutely love that thing. My wife hates it. and I bought it, probably about 11 or 12 years ago. And every year I do something at it. So it's completely done up and I love it. I drive it everywhere. She's absolutely petrified of the thing.
We had Hugo Monnier on a few weeks ago and it seems to be a trend with our rugby memorabilia that we treasure. He said his wife didn't allow him to have any rugby memorabilia in the house. So it seems to be a trend with the wives on the show here.
Yeah, I guess when we were together from the start, really, me and my missus. But I mean, when you go to rugby matches for, what did it play, 15 years? I guess it gets a bit tiresome after a while. So, you know, whenever I've got to have rugby memorabilia on the house might be a little bit overkill. And on top of that, she's an interior designer, so I'm not sure rugby jersey fits into her spectrum.
Into a good couch or something, you want to keep an eye on them.
Yeah, like as we speak, I'm actually busy just building myself like a wooden shed outside where I'm just going to put all my rugby stuff up. And the only thing I really need there is just a proper keg, you know.
You can start doing tours, and you can start charging then of your rugby memorabilia.
No, I'll have it. I'll have it up and running by the Lions tour, no doubt.
Get Guinness to send you out a keg.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait.
By the time Ian gets to go over to South Africa and play in the Guinness Pro 14, he can take a visit to his shed.
Well, he's more than welcome. I'll definitely give him a midweek luncheon that will follow into a dinner, and it'll be perfect prep for the Saturday against the Storm.
I look forward to that.
Scott, it has been a great pleasure having you on. It has been so interesting to talk to you about all that's going on in South Africa and your experience with the Springboks, and it really has been a pleasure to chat to you here today.
Ian, thank you very much for having me. I know the sun's setting here. I was set outside, but all the best with your winter, and good luck with your rugby, and can't wait for next year. It seems to be a big year in rugby.
Thanks very much, John. It's been great having you on.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Cheers to everybody for watching and listening today. Don't forget you can continue to get involved in our Facebook group and on Twitter. A huge big thank you to everyone involved today. Producer Pat, Paul, Dermot, Ian, Anthony and everybody that helped getting this show together. This has been House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Slán go fóill.
Go n-éirí you live.
Nailed it.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.